Owen. Susan Cain says we live in a country that values extroverts, whether it's at school, at work, or in the larger culture. She wrote in the New York Times recently that most of us work at places where people skills and brainstorming and collaboration are prized more than the contributions of the solitary employee who values their privacy. She also writes in her new book, Quiet, that schools tend to be designed more for extroverts than introverts, with its emphasis on shared learning and class participation. Susan Cain says there are distinct and unique advantages to being an introvert, including being a reflective thinker and a good listener. Rosa Parks was an introvert and titled her memoir, Quiet Strength. Gandhi, another introvert, famously said, "In a gentle way, you can shake the world." Well, we're intrigued and have invited Susan Cain to join us on Radio Times. Again, her book is called Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. And Susan Cain, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Marty.
You're very welcome. I have to say, when we booked the show, I said to our producer, she can talk, right?
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. I get that reaction a lot. And then the other reaction I get is surprise at the fact that I actually can talk.
Exactly.
You know, and I think that's such a funny question in a way. It's a completely understandable one, but a funny one because the statistics actually show that 50% of Americans, believe it or not, are introverts. So when I speak of introverts, you know, I'm not necessarily talking about a hermit who never leaves their house. You know, I'm really talking about kind of you and me or people we know. It's really one out of every two or three people we know who are introverts. And what I'm trying to shine a light on is that there are a lot of people out there who are kind of passing as extroverts, but who are still living in a world that is set up to deplete their energies because it's really set up for extroverts.
And I want to get to all of that, but just a couple of questions about you.
Yeah.
You worked for a time as a lawyer on Wall Street, and first of all, I would think that's a profession that attracts extroverts, and I can't imagine a more extroverted place than Wall Street. But you write about the fact that you had certain skills, more introverted skills, that actually served you, even if you're not working as a Wall Street lawyer today.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I would actually estimate that more than half of my colleagues were introverts as well. So this wasn't just me. But yeah, you know, I had the idea when I first started practicing as a Wall Street lawyer that my way of being was not going to serve me well because I figured you needed to be, you know, very bold and very assertive. And I wasn't naturally those things. But instead, I ended up drawing on this completely different constellation of traits that was very effective, and I saw my fellow introverted lawyers doing this too. You know, and it was things like listening really well in negotiations, which any negotiation scholar will tell you is the key to negotiating well, preparing very effectively, being able to make one-on-one alliances with people behind the scenes, so that even if you're not the person to you know, take charge of a meeting or hold forth to a whole room very naturally, there's still a lot of other ways to form connections that can be just as effective.
Did you like being in the courtroom, or was that really something that was too hard for you as a more introverted person?
Oh, well, you know what? I should say I was not a trial lawyer.
Okay.
I was what's called a deal lawyer. So I was more a lawyer who was negotiating contracts and helping business people to put deals together. You know, things like if two companies were merging, I would help them negotiate their merger agreement. So that actually, I can't really speak to what it's like to be a trial lawyer, but for deal lawyering, I found to be very compatible with being an introvert because, you know, there's a lot of time that you're spending, like, thinking deeply about what this contract should look like. And then even when you come into to a room full of people to negotiate, these other skills that I was just talking about can really be effective. You know, taking a lower-key constructive approach can really benefit everybody when you're trying to make a deal happen.
As you mentioned, maybe a third, maybe as much as a half of the population might describe themselves as introverted. What do you think the qualities then of an introvert are?
Well, you know, I thought you said it very well in the introduction. Introverts tend to be deep and reflective thinkers. And, you know, you can even see this in tests in the lab. If you give introverts and extroverts sort of difficult problems to solve that require a certain degree of persistence and really thinking things through, you'll find in these kinds of problems that introverts tend to do better. They spend more time thinking about the problem before they actually tackle it, and they spend more time solving it, and they more often get the right answer. And you know, and then we see this in the real-life workplace as well.
Do you think introverts, and again, we're speaking broadly, of course, knowing that the people are much more complicated than this.
But
do you think they have that unlike extroverts, who I think are stimulated by stimulation, if you know what I mean?
I do.
Do you think introverts are sort of overwhelmed by stimulation?
Well, you know, sometimes it's overwhelmed and sometimes it's something a little less than that. But yeah, you're getting really at the heart of what makes an introvert an introvert or an extrovert an extrovert. And that really is what level of stimulation do you need to feel at your best, at your most alive, at your most energized. So introverts tend to enter that sweet spot with a much lower level of stimulation, and whereas extroverts really crave more stimulation to feel at their best. And we're talking now not only about social stimulation, although that's a key component, but it's other kinds of stimulation too, like levels of background noise, for example. There's an interesting study by the psychologist Russell Gein, who found that if you give introverts and extroverts math problems to solve, the introverts do better with lower levels of background noise, and the extroverts need higher levels of background noise. And this is such an important thing to understand because, of course, when we're designing schools and workplaces, there tends to be only kind of one level of stimulation on offer at any given time. And kind of by definition, that can only serve half the people in the room.
Do you think introverts get confused with people who are shy? Do you, in your own mind, see a difference between those kinds of people?
Yeah, that's a really important question. They are very different. So introversion is what we were just talking about. You know, how much stimulation do you require? And shyness is really different. That's just about the fear of negative social judgment.
And that's very different than having these personality traits.
Yeah, it is different, although, of course, you know, culturally and in the public mind, these two traits overlap, and psychologists find that to some degree they overlap, too, in the population, although they really debate to what degree, and the overlap is not all that high. Mm. You know, so just as an example, Bill Gates seems like a person who is quite introverted. Most people describe him that way, you know, quite reserved, quite private, but he doesn't seem to be fazed by other people's opinions of him. You don't get the impression that he's worried about what other people think. So he's probably not shy.
I like the subtitle of your book, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. And when I see the can't stop talking, I think of cable TV, you know, and all the opining and yelling and screaming that goes on.
Yeah.
For introverts, when they see that, is that just a complete and total turnoff?
I would say to some degree, yes. You know, there's some entertainment value in that for everybody, I think. But, yeah, you know, it's funny. Just last night somebody was saying to me, you know, he considers himself an introvert, and he was saying he was flipping the channels on his TV, and he came across a program with Bill Moyers, who, of course, you know, interviews and speaks in a very understated, quiet, thoughtful way. There's a lot of space between his words. And he was saying, wow, this is such a welcome breath of fresh air for him.
You also went for, and I guess part of your research to, in understanding the kind of extrovert ideal, as you describe it, is you went to a Tony Robbins seminar, Unleash the Power Within. What did you see? What did you hear?
Well, it was really fun. I've got to say, it was an interesting experience. I had no idea what to expect. I hadn't really researched it before on purpose. My reason for going was that I was interested in knowing more about what Americans consider the ideal self to be. And since Tony Robbins is one of our premier self-help leaders, you know, I thought that would be an interesting way to get at the question. So I showed up at the seminar having no idea what I was in for. And it turned out to be a 3 or 4 day weekend where you're at it 16 hours a day, literally 16 hours. You're with thousands of other people together in a room with Tony Robbins up on stage the entire time. Like he's up there for 16 hours, you know, talking and dancing and joking around, and it's very intense. And you know, there were parts of it that were really surprisingly fun because the way that he makes everybody feel very energized throughout the whole thing is, you know, there's a lot of dancing, and I actually love to dance, so you spend a lot of your time dancing in the aisles to top 40 classics.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it actually really was kind of fun. The thing that did strike me about it is, you know, it's a seminar that's designed to teach you about your own personal power. And I was struck by the fact that the version of personal power that was on offer there was really one that was about taking action, you know, and maximum energy at all times. And, you know, one of the primary dichotomy that I trace in my book is the kind of age-old conflict between the, quote, man of action and the, quote, man of contemplation. And I was just really struck in the seminar that there wasn't really space for contemplation. You know, it was kind of all action all the time, and action was presented as the solution to all of life's troubles.
And did you find that exhausting, overwhelming?
You know, it wasn't so much that it was exhausting, honestly. It was more that I felt like there was a core piece of myself that I really value that was not celebrated at all in this version of the ideal self. You know, like the part of myself that really likes to, you know, just sit and look at the stars and think about what things mean and not how you're going to apply those things, but just thinking about meaning for its own sake. I thought that was not what I was seeing at the seminar.
But do you think, and I know you haven't traveled the world to run this experiment, but do you think we are a country that values the extrovert because we have this kind of frontier mentality and, you know, pull ourselves up by our bootstraps kind of thinking whether it's true or not?
Yeah, well, this is a really interesting question. I mean, yes, to some degree, this is, as you suggest, part of our country's DNA. And in fact, you know, the early Americans really liked to distinguish themselves as being very active people compared to what they saw as the languid aristocracy of the British from whom they had come. And so this is, to some degree, in our DNA. But really, when things shifted, was at the turn of the 20th century, because until then, we had lived in what cultural historians call a culture of character, where we really praised people, we evaluated people based on their moral rectitude and what was going on in their inner selves. You know, were they good people? And this was during the time that people were living together in small towns or on farms, living alongside people they had known all their lives. But then, all of a sudden, at the turn of the 20th century, we saw the rise of big business and people flocking to the cities and needing to distinguish themselves at job interviews and on sales calls. And so suddenly, qualities like being very magnetic and personable and masterful, these were the things that started to be celebrated. And so that's when we entered what historians call our culture of personality. And that's really the culture we're still living in today.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking with Susan Cain about introverts and extroverts. She's the author of a new book called Quiet, and it's subtitled The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. And we're taking calls from introverts and extroverts at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Lauded for his luminous tone and impeccable technique, James Ennis joins the Philadelphia Orchestra and Charles Dutoit for Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto. Charles Dutoit also conducts Bartok's Concerto for Orchestra. Tickets at philorc.org or by phone 215-893-1999. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Kimmel Center, Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto with James Ennis and the Philadelphia Orchestra.
When should fruit trees be pruned? And what does it take to get big, tasty fruits? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal some essential fruit tree timing and trickery, plus mapping the spread of the bamboo invasion and answers to all your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
When I was about your age, I was making some real stupid decisions and some stupid calls that was causing me blood on my hands and my head. Stop.
On the next Fresh Air, Amina Matthews talks about being a former gang member who now works to stop gang violence. She's profiled in the documentary The Interrupters, which will be shown on Frontline. Join us. This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Susan Cain about her new book called Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Susan, I have to say, when I finished reading your book yesterday, I said to myself, and actually posted this on our Facebook page, that I feel like I'm both an extrovert and an introvert. And I think many people are a combination of all the things that you and I have been talking about.
Yes, yes. And you probably saw that there's a word for people who really fall right in the middle of the introvert-extrovert spectrum, and they're called ambiverts. Hmm. So it sounds like you're an ambivert.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as you're suggesting, even for people who really more or less fall on one side of the spectrum or the other, we're all still a kind of glorious mishmash of traits.
Right.
And even Carl Jung, who was the psychologist who in 1921 first popularized these terms, introvert and extrovert, even he said there is no such thing as a pure introvert or a pure extrovert. And what Jung said was such a man would be in a lunatic asylum.
Interesting.
So I think that's important to remember. You know, the analogy that I would make is, you know, it's kind of like talking about women and men. You can more or less describe what it means to be male or what it means to be female, but for any man or for any woman, they're going to have aspects of the other in them that are more or less dominant at different times.
Sure. You mentioned something earlier about introverts in the sense passing as extroverts.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess because I think it's true in many ways that we do value that more extroverted personality. Is that something that you have learned to do yourself?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's something that almost every introvert learns to do to one degree or another. You know, you learn it from a very early age, from the time you enter preschool, really. And the question is, to what degree do you do it? And are you doing it a reasonable amount of the time, or are you doing it too much of the time so that you burn out? One funny thing is that now that I've been on book tour for the last few weeks and I'm doing a ton of media and a ton of public speaking, and some of my readers who have been following my blog for a while are starting to question, like, are you really an introvert?
Because you're talking so much, right?
Yeah. and I'm glad that they're asking, because, it's useful to say, I have to push myself a lot to do this stuff. I love it. I love it because I'm so passionate about my topic that helps me transcend my normal preference to be, you know, sitting in a cafe with my laptop. So I love to talk about it, but it does require pushing.
Indeed.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think so many people do this. They just don't admit it or talk about it.
You know, I was also thinking, as I was reading your book, that I had an extroverted father who was married to, frankly, an introverted mother. I mean, you know, that they had very different personalities. And clearly, having read your book, one was an extrovert and one was an introvert. I don't think that's so unusual, though.
I agree with you. And, you know, it's funny because most of the studies that I've looked at about married couples show that about 50% of the relationships are introvert-extrovert pairs, and the others are people who marry, you know, someone of like type. But I have to say, in my anecdotal experience, almost every couple I talk to tells me that they're a mix, you know, one introvert, one extrovert. And I think that this is because the two types really need each other and are drawn to each other and understand that they complement each other. You know, it really is a yin and yang, which is important to emphasize, because I think, you know, you could look at the title of my book and think that I'm calling for, like, the overthrow of extroverts, and that's not it at all. My husband's an extrovert.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I love extroverts. I'm just calling for a balance between the two.
Let me talk a little bit about the workplace, and this was actually a piece that you had in the New York Times, which you also cover this in your book as well, which is that, workplaces prize things like brainstorming sessions, and, you know, the walls have been torn down between desks, and it does at least attempt to foster a more cooperative relationship. How do you think an introvert deals with that kind of a work environment?
Oh, I mean, I know how they deal with it because I've interviewed so many of them. They're silently going nuts a lot of the time.
Too much stimulation?
Too much stimulation, too much being on all the time. And then also, it's not only the too muchness, it's also the not enoughness. Uh-huh. You know, there's not enough time to go off by yourself and work autonomously in the way that introverts crave, and in frankly the way that their employers should be happy that they crave, because that kind of work can generate pretty amazing stuff. But, so I think it's really a loss for everyone.
But do you think that the brainstorming, such as it is, that's overrated?
Yeah, I do. I really want to be clear about this, because I'm not calling for the end of teamwork or, you know, the end of the exchange of ideas at all. I think there's really a place for that. But I think what is overrated is the idea that all creativity and productivity comes from this collaborative place, which I think is, you know, where our workplaces tend to be right now. And in fact, you know, 40 years of research on brainstorming has repeatedly found that individuals produce more ideas and better ideas than groups who are brainstorming.
That's so interesting, because it seems such a valued enterprise, brainstorming.
I know. One interesting thing from the studies, though, shows that there is a value to it. It's right. Just not the value we're thinking. There's a value that people tend to feel an increased sense of trust. It raises morale. And people who have been engaged in a brainstorming project tend to think that they've done really well, even though the reality may be very different. So I think that, you know, there's a certain social cohesion that comes from it, quite apart from the intrinsic value.
And for the introvert, I guess it's the solitude, the privacy, the quiet that helps them think through a project or think through a problem.
Yeah, you know, that's right. And you can see this if you look at children in preschool, you know, who are acting exactly the way they want to act. You know, they haven't yet been socialized to conform to some norm. You can see that there are some children who really want to go off by themselves to play. And this doesn't change when they become grown-ups. This is still their basic preference. But what I also want to say is there's value in this for extroverts as well, because the fact is that we are all such social creatures, introverts and extroverts, both of us. We're so social that if we come together in a group of people, we start to instinctively mimic the opinions of the others in our group without even realizing that we're doing it. This has been found in a bunch of different ways. And, you know, even something as seemingly visceral and personal as who you're attracted to, you will start to become attracted to people who other members of your group have deemed attractive. And again, you don't think you're doing it. You think it's just your own opinion that you've arrived at, but it's not.
And that's called groupthink, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a version of groupthink. And so what this tells us is that if you really want to know what you think and you want to, you know, develop the kernel of ideas that are deep in your mind and you want to make them come to light, to some extent, you're going to have to go off by yourself to make that happen.
Well, we are talking about introverts and extroverts with our guest, Susan Cain, author of a new book called Quiet, and it's subtitled The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop, in a World That Can't Stop Talking. And we have just a couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get to Andre from Langhorne to join us on Radio Times. Andre, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, I was wondering if your guest found any connection between birth order and the degree of introversion or extroversion, specifically maybe with only children.
And Andre, why do you ask?
Well, I found it curious. My only sibling was born when I was 10, so I kind of put myself on sort of the only child category, and I tend to be more introverted. And I always wonder if it's because when I was younger, a lot of times I had to kind of occupy myself, and it was more alone time than, you know, someone who grew up in a family of 3, 4, or 5 kids.
Interesting. Susan Cain, have you looked at that?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. I actually haven't seen anything on birth order, which isn't to say it's not out there, because, you know, the research on this field is so vast that it might be there. But what you say certainly makes sense. You know, the current thinking is that introversion, extroversion are about 50% genetic and 50% not genetic, or, you know, environment.
Experience,
right. And so what you're describing certainly sounds like the kind of experience that could push you along, regardless of the temperament you were born with, you know, push you more in an introverted direction.
Andrea, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let's see what looks like Willie from Columbus, Ohio has to say. Willie, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Hey, Willie.
Great. You know, the thing that I found interesting, a couple of years ago, I had a personality test, and I always thought that I was an extrovert, but realized that there were times where I had to spend a lot of time alone to kind of recharge my batteries. And through personality tests, I found out that I was, in fact, introverted, and that what introversion meant, which surprised me, was that you get your energy by being alone as opposed to getting your energy out of a large group of people. And I thought that was really interesting because, you know, once I go home, I really don't like to answer the phone. I don't talk a lot. But if you were to see me out in, you know, my work setting, you would probably think I was a very extroverted person.
Well, Willie, I can totally relate to what you're saying. And,
yeah.
I appreciate the call to Radio Time. Susan, anything you want to add to that?
No, only that, Willie, what you just told me is the story of so many people. I hear that all the time. And, you know, one interesting thing that happens with that is what happens when you go home and you're needing to recharge. And I don't know if you live alone or if you live with family members or roommates, but it can sometimes lead to conflict there because you're needing to desperately recharge at that point. But you, the people who you're living with might be craving you to still be connected to them. So I always think that balance needs to continue.
Willie, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Not to get too personal here, Susan, but you said you're married to an extrovert. So when you go home, do you have to sort of negotiate that recharging time?
You know, I personally don't because I guess I'm lucky. Most of my work life now is writing.
Uh-huh.
So in a way, I'm getting my recharging time while I'm working. And by the time I get home, I'm really craving being with my family. But you know, that's a very different situation from what many people have.
Indeed. Let me see what Jim from Avalon has to say. And Jim, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
My question or kind of comment question is that I was a salesman for 42 years, a printing salesman. And for the last 32 years with one company, and one day a friend of mine in the company said to me, you know something, you keep thinking you're an extrovert. You're not an extrovert, you're an introvert. That's why you're such a good salesman.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of, you know, threw me because I went through my life thinking I was, and then I realized, no, I wasn't. I was an introvert. And the other part of the question is that does introvertism have any relationship, any cause of fear and procrastination?
Well, Jim, let me ask you a question, though. But so you were a good salesman. You thought you were an extrovert. Actually, you were an introvert. What do you think made you such a good salesman?
I was very comfortable when I went into people's offices. What do I think? I think, you know, personality, knowledge, attentiveness, interestedness, you know, all that kind of stuff that the client wants.
Well, that's very interesting. And you asked about fear. Susan, go ahead.
Before I get to fear, I wanted to just say, I actually, in my book, profile a salesman by the name of John Berghoff, who is a real superstar salesman and an introvert. And he's actually thought a lot about how his introversion has helped him as a salesman. And one of the things he says, I'm sure you've heard this from your sales background, he said there's an expression in sales that we have two ears and one mouth, and we should use them in that proportion.
Oh, the idea of actually listening to somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
Jim, thanks for the call to Radio Times. He did ask a question about fear, you know, if fear plays any role in introversion.
Yeah, you know, fear, introversion not so much. Fear more relates to shyness,
right.
You know, which has to do with anxiety and fear of social situations. So to the extent for any individual that shyness is overlapping with introversion, that's where fear would come in.
I'm not an expert on the personality of President Barack Obama, but he seems to have, at least certainly compared to Bill Clinton, who looks like an extrovert to me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly. He seems to like his privacy. He apparently doesn't socialize with a lot of people at night. He likes to be home with his family. Have you thought about President Obama and introversion and extroversion?
Yeah, I actually have, and he does strike me as a classic introvert. And again, not a shy one. He does not seem shy at all. But yeah, you know, if you look at the first couple pages of his first memoir, Dreams from My Father,
sure,
it's basically a meditation, those first few pages, on how much he loves solitude and how he feels safest when he's in solitude. And, you know, I think we can see this in the kinds of behaviors that you were just identifying of not wanting to socialize in the usual Washington way. I think it's his introversion. Well, he's criticized for it in some ways, but it has also served him in other ways that I think people don't pay attention to so much. Like, for example, the way he his campaign in 2008 was so carefully planned and so meticulously planned. That's really the hallmark of the way an introvert might do things. And, you know, the way he writes his own speeches, and they tend to be quite cerebral. You kind of get the sense of a person who's been deeply thinking and reflecting all his life, and that kind of comes through in his rhetoric when it's working correctly. So all this is very typical introvert stuff.
Let me get Donovan from Richmond, Virginia, to join us on Radio Times. Donovan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi. My wife and I had just taken the Myers-Briggs personality test yesterday, and we were looking at compatibility results. She's an introvert. I'm an extrovert. We were quite fearful about what those results might be. But we ended up finding out that we were, like, one of the best matches when it came to the four-letter acronym mm-hmm. that you're associated with that test. And one of the things it said, which actually brought us quite a bit closer together, is the fact that, that we actually help one another in socially dangerous environments. And I was just curious of your guest if you had any examples in your book or otherwise where two opposites actually helped one another in that sense.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, go ahead, Susan.
Yeah, thank you. This is a great question. And in fact, I'll say it's not only in the marital context, but also in the work context. It's been shown that that groups that are a mix of introverts and extroverts actually do the best, much better than groups that are more homogenous. And you can see this in many married couples, and you can see it in business partnerships as well. And, you know, one classic example of it that, well, let me stick to a marital example because that's what you're really asking about. I mean, what you see is you see married couples and they go to parties, for example. You're talking about social situations. And one person may be the one who kind of represents that couple in a big and public way in the group. And the other part of the couple is the one who is off having more intimate conversations with people, maybe on the side of the party, but they're the one who kind of gets the deeper intelligence. And the two together can form a really potent match. And, so the real key is respecting who the other person is instead of wanting them to be more like the way you are. And it sounds like you guys are doing that really well.
Yeah, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And Susan, are you then at a party more likely the one that's having the one-on-one conversation quietly in the corner somewhere?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I always think of parties. For me, they're a series of one-on-one conversations, and that's how I love for them to be. And my husband is much more the larger-than-life figure at the center of the party. And it works really well for us.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation and our callers. And again, Susan Cain is our guest today on Radio Times. She's written a new book called Quiet, and it's subtitled The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. She worked for some time as a lawyer on Wall Street. She now does a lot of mediation and communication skills, and we are taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Taking calls from introverts and extroverts. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Garden State Wine Growers Association supports WHYY and presents their Wine and Chocolate Wine Trail this weekend, February 11th and 12th. Visitors can make this Valentine's Day one to remember by experiencing New Jersey's wines and chocolates. More than 30 participating New Jersey wineries across the state will be featuring tastings specifically pairing red and blush wines with an assortment of chocolates, along with other gourmet treats traditionally associated with Valentine's Day. To plan a wine trail, visit newjerseywines.com.
Thank you for choosing to listen to WHYY, member-supported public media, and made possible because of support from people like you. We're trying to reach the goal of $800,000 to finish the winter membership campaign. Make a pledge now, and we'll invest that pledge right back into the services you rely on. You've made the choice to listen to WHYY, so now make the choice to support it. Visit WHYY.org or 1-888-345-9499, and thank you.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. There are lots of books about fathers and sons bonding over sports, but now a father, a sports reporter, tells of connecting with his daughters through the games they play. Also, we'll take an extended listen to Adele, who's expected to rule at this weekend's Grammys. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe, talking with Susan Cain about introverts and extroverts and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Susan, let me read something. We got an email from actually from Bristol Bay, Alaska, from a commercial fisherman, and he writes, I'm a commercial fisherman. I've done it most of my life and very much an introspective kind of guy, yet must live for months aboard a ship where there's no escaping my chatty crewmen. One thing I make clear to any crew that I hire, that when they get diarrhea of the mouth and I tell them to shut it for a while, I mean leave me alone, even though they never do it. And he goes on from there. And I can imagine being an introvert out on the sea, stuck with a bunch of chatty crewmen. Any advice for him?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. That's a tricky one. I mean, because it sounds like, you know, he's already doing the best thing he could do, which is trying to communicate his preferences to people. It might be a good idea to really sit down and have more of a heart-to-heart as opposed to kind of a,
telling him to stop talking,
but, you know, a real heart-to-heart to explain where he's coming from. You know, one person who actually did that really effectively, funnily enough, was Douglas Conant, who was the CEO of Campbell Soup, and he actually, he describes himself as a shy introvert, and he says he sat down one day with his colleagues and really explained to them where he was coming from and that he's not aloof and it's not that. And he said that having that kind of a frank talk really opened the doors.
Oh, that's great. Let me see what Amanda has to say from Old City in Philadelphia. Amanda, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
So I work in a situation where I'm incredibly introverted. I don't talk very much at all. And I work with an outrageously extroverted person who will share details about her life that I just don't even want to know, but she'll do it at a volume where everybody in the room can hear it. And sometimes I just have to leave the room. And I wanted to know if you had any advice for someone like me in the situation that I'm in.
And have you ever talked to her directly, Amanda?
We don't get along, so I don't address her. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I wonder whether other people, even though you describe yourself as an extreme introvert, I wonder whether other people are also bothered by her behavior.
I mean, I would imagine so. We have two large rooms, and when you're working in the other large room, you can hear her. And it's a good 100 feet away.
Wow.
You can hear her talking. And I didn't know if you had any advice for tolerance for it, you know?
Yeah, I do. Amanda, let me see what Susan Cain has to say. Any thoughts, Susan?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky one. You know, I would have said as my first answer to yes, try to talk to her, but since it sounds like you don't get along, I do wonder, there's always power in alliances, and if you think that other people might feel this way, I wonder if there's someone else who you think might get along with her who feels this way, who might be able to do the talking for you. So there's that. But, and other than that, you know, tolerating it, that's,
yeah,
it's kind of whatever you can steel yourself to do.
Well, and it seems, I mean, if someone is that loud in that small a space, I can't imagine that other people aren't bothered, or that
exactly.
That the boss isn't also bothered.
Exactly. Yeah, I wonder, I mean, is there anybody else there who you feel more comfortable with, who you think might feel the same way that you do, and
yeah,
you could start talking to them?
Amanda, good luck, and I appreciate the call to Radio Times. You can call as well, 1-888-477-9499. Susan, we talked briefly about schools,
yes,
and schools run the gamut, of course. There does seem to be more emphasis on group learning, certainly than when I was in school, when we sat
yeah
in our desks and tried to follow along while the teacher essentially lectured to us. It's more collaborative today. Can you talk just a bit about, I guess, introverts and what they need in a school environment?
Yeah, this is a deeply important question, because the studies do tell us, and also all you have to do is watch an introverted child to know this, that introverted kids do prefer to work autonomously. They enjoy lecture formats. They enjoy that kind of individualized learning. And so when they are confronted with a school day that is mostly made up of group projects, it can really be it's not just that it's overwhelming for them, it's just not enjoyable. You know, it's annoying, and it makes learning unpleasant. That's the really sad thing about it. I had one young woman just said to me recently that she really wants to go back to grad school, but she said, I just can't take the group learning anymore, so
really?
I'm not going to go.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, it saddened me, but it didn't surprise me. That's pretty typical.
But
I do want to say that there are like some degree of group learning when it's really well managed can be great for introverted kids because it gets them chatting with their peers in ways that they might not be comfortable doing if they had to raise their hand in front of the whole class.
But it sounds like you're also saying that the teachers and perhaps even schools need to understand the different styles of learning between children who are more extroverted and those who are more introverted.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's become very lopsided right now, and they do need to understand that.
Well, let me get back to our callers. Looks like we have Bill from Cheltenham joining us on Radio Times. And, Bill, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, I just had a question. I would have characterized myself as an extrovert up until I heard some people talking today. And I deal with a lot of people all day, and I love having conversations with them. However, when I come home, I don't like to talk to anybody. And I've noticed, like, my fiance really likes to be around people and really wants to be around me. I just need time, I guess, when I get home to just not deal with anybody. I guess, is that a common problem with people who are introverted?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call it a problem, though. I would just call it that's your preference, and it's a really natural and legitimate preference, not a problem at all. You know, the only place it becomes a problem is if you and your fiancé develop misunderstandings because of that. But I really have seen that there are ways to get around that. You know, if you just have a frank discussion with each other about what your needs are, you can work out a protocol that works for both of you. You know, so maybe in your case it would be, okay, we know that every day when you get home from work, you're going to go off by yourself for half an hour to recharge. And when the half an hour's up, then you're going to come and connect with her again. And if you both have an understanding that this is how it is, you can avoid the hurt feelings that can otherwise go along with this difference.
Bill, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I wonder, though, Susan, when, you know, the so-called extrovert goes home, I have a feeling they need to recharge their batteries as well. They probably don't want to answer the phone or, you know, they want a little downtime, too.
Yeah, you know, everybody's on a spectrum with this stuff. And sure, you know, we all, to some degree, all extroverts sometimes need downtime, just the way all introverts sometimes crave being around people. You know, like if I'm sitting at home by myself all day, I start to go nuts, even though I'm a pretty strong introvert. So these things aren't total and they're not extremes. They're just sort of tendencies.
Let me see what looks like Robert from Allentown has to say. And Robert, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. So,
hi there.
I'm a part-time pastor by training, and my question was about to what degree can we change or grow in our mix or our personal blend of being an introvert or an extrovert? If half of it is our nature and half of it is our experience, as we experience through our life either more or less interactions with people, to what degree might there be some flexibility in that?
Go ahead, Susan.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that's a great, important question, and you know, the answer is complicated, but it's basically, yes, people do change and shift over the course of their lives, for sure. Very often what they're developing is not so much a different personality as a different set of skills. So, you know, maybe you start off as a person who's not comfortable at a cocktail party, but by going to them repeatedly or by giving repeated sermons in your case, you know, you can get a level of comfort that you might not have had at the beginning. Have you now turned into an extrovert?
That was my question to you, Robert. Yeah, go ahead.
During my pastoral training, we took QC, temperament and personality disorder. And when I took it, there's a portion of the grades you on whether you're an introvert or an extrovert. And I'm certain that if I would have taken this test 10 years ago, I would have come up strongly introverted. And when I took the test now, I had already had several years of lay ministry and spiritual leadership where I had preached and taught Sunday school classes and counseling, and I came up with a break even. I came up with a score of 10-10 in the personality disorder score, which meant that I was evenly introverted and extroverted, and I thought, boy, that is not my experience throughout most of my life. Something's changed. And it was part of our discussion in the class, too, which is, can you change? And the instructor said that he felt that he had changed as he went through his ministry, and he was put more in a position of dealing with people, that he enjoyed it more, and that It was something that he found to value, and something that he needed more. As he did more of it, he valued the emotional payback that he got from it. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, it's become something that I really need in my life now. He said, I still have an introverted piece of me, and I think our culture does undervalue the meditative, contemplative piece that needs to be separate and alone. We do need more of that in our culture and in our own personality. I think it's undervalued, but I've noticed that change, and I just wanted to bring it up.
Interesting. I'm glad you did, Robert. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. Susan, anything you want to add to that?
No, only that, that's something that I hear a lot, and I think it's interesting. You know, I don't think you don't see an introverted person turning into a Bill Clinton. I think that we kind of shift, a few notches up a spectrum, up or down, during the course of our lives.
I was also thinking about when you get passionate about something. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that, and clearly, you know, we could hear from Robert's call the kind of passion that he has as a preacher. I also think that can bring out those more extroverted character traits. Maybe more contemplative as well. But just when you feel a great deal of passion for something, you want to talk about it and, you know, live it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I really think the way to think about this is that we all are we're all taking on aspects of the other type to suit whatever is happening at that moment. So, you know, let's say you're an extrovert and you are working on a paper that you're really passionate about, and you want to get that paper out into the world. You might sit down for 6 hours at your desk, and you're very excited to sit down and work on that paper. And it may not mean that is now your default mode, your new default mode. But for that moment, it is, and it's real for that moment. So these things are so complicated.
Yes, they are. Robert, thanks for the call. Let's see what looks like Casey from California has to say. Casey, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
This is an awesome topic.
Oh, thank you.
I have a comment and then a question about it. I'm a lecturer, and I lecture to both students in schools as well as groups and workplaces. And I'm privy to kind of the after lecture touching base with both the teachers as well as supervisors and managers. And I've noticed that the scoring, like when people are kind of evaluating the students' participation as well as the staff's participation, that the introverts, they seem to score them low because they're more contemplative during the actual presentation. As if they're not as engaged versus maybe the extroverts who are nodding or clapping or gesturing. And I'd love for you to speak about that a little bit.
Casey, that's a great great call. Let me give Susan Cain a chance to weigh in. Susan?
Yeah, this is so interesting because I have actually been out on the road the last few weeks speaking to all kinds of audiences. I was at Google and Microsoft and the Treasury and so on. And anyway, most of my audiences were like 95% introverts based on a show of hands that I took at the beginning. And it was striking how much the room had a kind of hushed quality as I was talking. You know, it was very different from your typical your typical audience at a lecture. And
perhaps didn't get the kind of nodding feedback that Casey was talking about?
Right. But the funny thing was, yes, there was much less of that during the lecture itself, although I could feel I could feel the connection that was existing between me and the audience. But there was less of the sort of outward markers of it. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing was, in a number of these occasions, the organizers had said to me, "Well, you know, most of these people are introverts, so we're not going to have very much Q&A. They probably won't ask many questions." But that didn't happen at all. We got tons of questions because I think they were engaged in the topic and so wanted to ask. But the quality of engagement in the room during the lecture was quite different. And I will say too, you know, I've been also a teacher. In the past, I taught negotiation seminars, and I'm very sympathetic to this issue because I found that it was much easier, honestly, to have extroverted students in the class because they're giving you just much more instant feedback, more gratification in the moment, whereas with introverted students, it's harder to tell if you're reaching them. They may not participate quite as easily, and you have to work harder to make that happen. So I think this is some of the reason for the bias in our classrooms. It's like it's a quite natural bias because it's not easy to teach. And extroverted students can make it easier.
Well, and I'm wondering, even interpersonally, you know, if you have, if you're trying to talk to someone who is more introverted, you know, there might be those awkward pauses, or, you know, while there's some thinking going on.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah. That's part of what underlies these dynamics, for sure.
So are you now, because you've been doing all these interviews, are you more skilled as an extrovert, Susan Cain?
I don't know if I think of it that way. Yeah. You know, I just say, I guess I don't think of it in those terms. I just think I'm really excited about talking about my book, but it's still me talking.
I got it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
Well, we did as well, and clearly the audience was engaged as well, talking with Susan Cain. She has worked as a lawyer. She does negotiations and communication education. She's a writer and the author of a new book that's called Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. And you can go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program, including things like Facebook and Twitter and the email and archives as well. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. Emily Bryant, our intern this semester. Susan Greenbaum, Patty Leswing, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder produce Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us.